Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And I have a question for you. Yeah, that's right. You, the HR team at small and medium companies. If I could help you get off of your messy spreadsheets when you're doing reporting and tell you how you could pull all of that data from all your different HR systems into one people dashboard automatically, would you be interested? I'm sure you would be. Well, that's why we built Employee Cycle, a people dashboard that helps you connect all of the best in breed popular HR systems you're using, like Bamboo HR, Namely, Zenefits, Greenhouse, Office 5, 15-5, Reflective, you name it, connecting all those systems to the people dashboard so that you can pull in all your data into one real-time, streamlined, and centralized view for you and your people team to be able to view, track, share, and analyze all that data in one place so that you can make smarter and data-driven workforce decisions. If that sounds of interest to you, which we sure it is, then please go to employeecycle.com to schedule a demo. We'd love to learn about your use cases and help you, or you can actually try it for free with a free trial. So here's the thing. We have a very interesting guest today, and so I would love for you to help me welcome Patrick Coldwell, head of people at FunApps. And today we're going to discuss how to move from remote work to a hybrid schedule. Patrick, welcome to the podcast. Woo!
Thanks very much, Bruce. Glad to be here.
You've heard some episodes, so you know I was going to do that, but hopefully it was still just as exciting.
It was great.
I've never heard that before. So, Patrick, you've heard some episodes before, so I'm going to ask you this question, which I think you'll be prepared to answer, which is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
I think I did know that question was coming. So my career started in the Australian mining industry. I came into a large global mining company on the graduate program about a decade ago. And it wasn't always what I wanted to do. I was a law school dropout. I loved various different parts of studying law. Something that stood out particular was the side of employment law and employee relations, but the rest of the law degree just wasn't quite doing it for me. So I am the dropout from law school who then shifted over to business school, started studying HR and marketing, and then without really knowing exactly what direction I wanted to go in, I thought, well, what kind of company do I want to join? And I was able to land that awesome grad position that gets you exposure to a whole different wealth of various things throughout a company, starting first in their org development team, working on leadership programs and learning, and then moving myself out to the coal mines in Central Australia, where I was there for a couple of years, which was really, you know, no pun intended, at the coal face of where everything happens in that business. getting a real kind of upfront view around employee and industrial relations, how to deal with some of the stickiest situations you can face in a HR role, and also how to work really well alongside frontline leaders and the impact they can have on people's experience. Then decided to throw that in. I'd done that for enough time. I quit my job. I packed my bag. I left my house and I moved over to London and eventually found where I am now. After a few different attempts, but found FunApps, which after a stint in London, moved over to New York. And almost 3 years later, here I find myself.
I definitely hear a book in your future, From Coal Mines to People Ops.
It'd be a great title.
Definitely would be. Can't wait to buy it. So Patrick, today we're discussing how to move from remote work to a hybrid schedule. And this is very timely because a lot of people are thinking about, what does this look like for them? Are they going to force everyone to go back to the office? Are they going to allow everyone the flexibility to work from home or to move around and work from whatever RV they want to move from? Or are they going to incorporate a flexible model? And so it would be great to start off with, how did you even start thinking about this process? And what were the pros and cons that you and your team were thinking about as you were evaluating whether or not you would go with remote or totally in the office before you came to the decision of hybrid work?
Yeah, I think it goes back a long way into FunApps' history, actually. I mean, as a company, We are completely bootstrapped. We've never had funding. We're still very small. We're about 70 people now across the globe. And we've gotten very used to, in the last couple of years, working a little bit more flexibly. So working from home, you know, 1 or 2 days a week was fairly common. I think we worked out at some point that about 90% of people were using some kind of flexible work. But having started the company in London, it then grew out to the US, to Singapore, to other parts of Europe. And we started to then experience, even before, you know, COVID-19 hit, what it was like having people in different time zones working remotely, relying on video technology and text technology to be able to connect with people. When COVID-19 hit, us alongside every other business in the world were basically forced to make some changes. We had everybody then be set up at home, which we thought would be a pretty insignificant shift. Everyone was kind of fairly used to the idea of flex working, especially if they'd been around fund apps for a few years. But obviously everything changes when you take away a lot of people's ability to be able to leave their home, to have a life outside of work or sometimes their bedroom. And obviously all the added pressures that the pandemic's brought to people's mental and physical health. It was about May that, actually I think it was a bit earlier, it might have been about April, that we started thinking as a company about, well, something we've learned through this process is that actually it doesn't really matter if people are in the office, if people are at home or some combination of both, work is still getting done. And that was a really good reflection for us to start to think about work far more than where people are actually based. And in May, I was then asked a question, which was, well, what happens after lockdown? I think at the time I'd been in a little New York studio, hadn't had any outside contact for a couple of months, living by myself, and I probably laughed it off to joke that maybe there wasn't a life after lockdown. But they asked a really, really good question, which was, well, at some point COVID-19 is going to stop, and every business around the world, including us, is going to be left with a decision around what do we do next. We didn't have any data. We weren't really sure what to do. I don't think anyone in our company pretends to know any of the answers. We just like to try and use good judgment. And we asked people. Easiest way you can understand, especially when you've got a company of 70 people, is to ask people, well, what's going to work for you? And we did a short survey, and one of the questions basically said, post COVID-19, what work arrangement do you want to work? And we asked everyone to take into context their personal situation, their commute, the tech that they have, the setup they have at home, the office environment, and just tell us openly what they would like. And they did. And when the results came back, what we were met with was a little bit of confusion to start with, thinking that it may not have helped us, but actually it was. It was a very telling piece of data that came back. And it said that 20% of our company wanted to return to the office 5 days a week. Which is not an insignificant amount, even though we're only 70 people, but 20% of any company is not insignificant. But 20% had a setup at home, which maybe wasn't great for them or whatever in their personal situation. It also might have been those people who really rely on that kind of social vibe and camaraderie in the office, the informal conversations that happen. They wanted to come back to work. We then had 20% of people who wanted the opposite. They'd found their groove at home. Some of the comments were, you know, I don't have to do my hour or 2 hour commute every day. I found my zone. I've got my focus. I really enjoy working from home. I don't actually want to go back to the office. And then the other 60% were people suggesting they want to do both. They'd like the ability to be able to come into the office maybe some days, come into stay at home other days, maybe time it around school holidays or their travel. And interestingly, within that, across the entire company, we had about 2/3 of our people that said they'd love the flexibility to work from somewhere that was not one of our office locations. They could be traveling interstate, sometimes across country borders, and they'd love the ability to still be able to combine work with that level of travel. And that was the big defining moment for us, where we realized that, you know, despite the craze on LinkedIn and Twitter around how remote work has gone from the future of work to be now, what our data was telling us, what our people was telling us, was that remote work only works for a percentage of our people. Likewise, our office environment only works for a percentage of our people. And what people, we learned through this, what we crave through this is actually the choice, as opposed to having to shift the business one way or the other. We called it Flexible Work 2.0. It's a weird little naming convention we've adopted over the last few years. Every time we upgrade something, we add a little 2.0 or 3.0 to it. But we call this Flexible Work 2.0. And we told our company about 6 or 7 weeks ago that they will have the option post-COVID to move to a hybrid model. They can choose a work environment that's going to work best for them, be it 5 days at home, 5 days at work, 5 days in the office, 5 days at a combination of both. And then we'd also support, with a few restrictions, given there's some tax issues, obviously, with this, we'd support people to be able to work in other locations that were not where our offices were based as well. And that is the big, long history of Flexible Work 2.0.
Very, very interesting. So can you give me a snapshot of where everyone is located?
Wow, right now, that is a great question. I think we've got a pretty good idea, but across our 70 people, we have around 50 that would have otherwise been in the London office. A lot of people have found reason to obviously get out of London to go with family. So I'd say we've got 50 people spread throughout the UK, but still a big cluster within travel distance into London. We have another 10 in our New York office. We work in a little WeWork here down the bottom of Manhattan. And based on people's family living circumstances, those people are scattered sometimes throughout New York. Other people are also traveling into other states. So a few different time zone elements there when you add that into it. We have a very small Singapore office, 2 people there. Obviously, Singapore has had a slightly different timeline to every other country, given they went into lockdown first. They've gone into kind of a second lockdown. They came out of it very quickly. So we have 2 people there, and then we have a bunch of remote, we call them remote workers because that's historically what they've been, although everyone is now remote. We've got a bunch of other of our fund appers who are throughout the EU in various countries.
Got it. The reason why I wanted to know that is so that the audience, as they're listening, can understand how you put this together based off the geographic makeup of your team. So the first question that I have about that is, did you filter down a deeper level in the survey to see how those different percentages and cohorts were reflected in regards to location? Because I'm curious if there was a correlation between people working in certain areas that were dealing with different degrees and seriousness when it came to COVID versus other places.
We didn't ask any identifying questions in it, mostly because at that point, we didn't really know what response we were going to get. All we really wanted from people is just brutal honesty. And the best way we could do that is just to run an all-company anonymous survey. So some people obviously wrote, there were lots of free text comments for people to put some commentary around what it was that might be driving that decision behind wanting to stay at home or come back to the office. At least within that and conversations we've had outside of the survey with people, it isn't leaning in any certain way towards different geographic regions. Those who've had a fair amount of remote working experience in the past, obviously a little bit more confident in the ability to say, I'd like to work from home permanently. What we did find is that people's personal circumstances rather than their geography were heavily weighting how they were going to think about their own work arrangement. If I take the parents of fund apps, we have about 14 or 15 parents, obviously, who've had an incredible time over the last 6 or 7 months trying to balance the deeds of being mums and dads with, you know, being employees for a company and sometimes being teachers as well. We had a lot of commentary around, you know, my remote working experience is very different when I've got, you know, the whole family at home and I don't have a quiet space to work and I'm sometimes teaching in the morning and sometimes doing work in the afternoon. So I don't really know what my perfect situation would be until I can see what it actually would be like post-COVID. So definitely one of our, I guess, groups that we identified as really keeping an eye on through this is what's going to work best for our parents.
Got it. So if I have this math correct, there were 20% that were accounted for who wanted to work in the office 5 days a week. Out of that 20%, do you think any of them were thinking about the fact that there would be a lot less people in the office? And so on any given day, it might only be 3 people or 5 people. And do you think that that still will provide that environment that they were looking for? Or are you still curious to see whether or not when they get to the office, because so many people and maybe some of the people that they were closest with, they wanted to be around and that they would usually talk with and hang out with at the water cooler or coffee break or whatever they did, if they're not there, do you think that that will impact if they continue, if they still want to work from the office every day?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question, and one we were challenged on actually from both scenarios. So when we had a really large number of people working out of our office, generally speaking, we'd only have maybe a dozen max people working from home on any given day pre-COVID. So our offices were fairly full. Part of the reason that was such an enjoyable environment for people was that vibe that is driven by having so many people. So I think you're spot on there. Likewise, some of our more permanent remote workers who've been doing this for quite some time pointed out that when everyone went remote at the same time, part of the reason why remote working has worked for us is because everyone is doing it. It also needed that mass of people to be able to encourage that remote environment where people still have that level of support and social vibes. When you have a mishmash of the two, it actually ends up being slightly more complex. We've tested it recently. So we've got two of our larger offices in the UK and the US have been able to have people back in the office. So we went out to people a good few weeks ago just to say, look, obviously, we're not going to force you to do anything that you do not want to do, but we recognize that there are some people who'd like to come back to the office. So you are welcome to come back to the office. The government's lifted restrictions. And we had, you know, our CEO, our CTO, a few others kind of trying to lead the way in making sure that office environment was going to have that same level of FundApps energy that people have gotten used to throughout their tenure here. So in London, we've seen a few days, usually 1 or 2 days every week, where we've had maybe a half dozen people in the office. We make sure that those people are sitting close to each other. One of the risks of having, you know, even an 80-person office, I think we can fit in London, and having, you know, six people on a day is that everyone's spread out so far that, you know, you can basically hear tumbleweed. So we made sure that people sit close together. We made sure there were enough kind of social interactions. People can have lunch, obviously still being socially distanced. And certainly some of our leaders leading from the front here, which is making sure there's time at the end of the day just to be able to socialize. A little bit more structured than what it usually is. You don't have to build in some of those things into the day when you've got 50 people in an office. It just happens organically. But a good test for us just to see what people think. The UK since then has issued a recommendation that if you can work from home, you should. In, I guess, the current light of changing advice that comes through, you know, we've been following it as it comes through. And I know, you know, quite a few people in our London office have been quite down about the fact that, you know, they're probably going to start to see some more restrictions and may not be able to have that office experience, even though it's small. So, yes, I think it is impacted by the basis of having a smaller group of people in there, but it's not insurmountable if you put a little bit of structure around encouraging that social situation, making sure you're finding ways to get together as opposed to just enjoying the location, you know, all individually.
And I believe you also said there were 20% who wanted to remain in this remote work status. I'm curious, what are your thoughts around people who noted in the survey that they still want to work from home, but this is during the time when everyone is working from home? Do you have any thoughts or feelings that those people, once everyone starts working back from the office, if that ever happens again, at least once everything starts opening back up to some sense of normalcy, do you believe that those people will still want to work from home? Or because things are opening up, you already have the flexibility to be able to allow those people to come right back in the office if they need to?
Yeah, I definitely think it's that latter part. There's certainly the risk that when not everyone's working remotely, that experience does change. The fact that I've been in New York for the past almost 2 years now, the experience when you're dialing into a London meeting room is very different when you have a power dynamic that's weighted in favor of that London meeting room. There's more communication that takes place in nonverbal ways. People are less aware of how their tone, how their body language can actually come across in a meeting room because you pick up on it very automatically. So you can actually feel very inferior if you're a remote worker, feeling that you're a bit of a passenger to a more primary meeting happening in our office. One of the principles we set out in our Flexwork 2.0 strategy was that we care about both the office and the remote experience equally. And what we mean by that is that even though we might have those six or seven people that were in the office enjoying a day there in London, if we do have a meeting, if one person's remote, then everyone's remote. It's a principle I think a lot of other companies have documented quite extensively because it works. And even though you might be in London, if one person's on Zoom, then everyone dials in individually on Zoom. just trying to even out that power dynamic. It does mean, obviously, on the social side of things, we've been leaning heavily on more virtual events. You know, we've had someone in our ops and office team who, you know, she's been managing a whole host of different virtual events for us over the past 6 months to keep people connected. What we have committed to is making sure that we now have a mix of both in-person and virtual events so that people aren't really losing out from picking one or the other or potentially a combo of both. The joy behind that flexibility, as you said, is that if people are remote or they're in the office and they want to change that, they're totally able to. The one expectation we did set with people who are working remote is that there are going to be times that we bring the family home for dinner. I'm not sure if we created that or if we stole that phrase from somewhere, but what we mean by it is that there are going to be points throughout the year, significant company milestones. We have an away day at the end of each year normally where we talk about the wins, some of the lowlights and learning, some of our strategy for the following year. There are going to be times where we do bring people together in person, regardless of if people are remote or not, which still gives that ability to encourage some of that face-to-face so that we don't potentially have somebody who, you know, starts with us remotely, works here for 2 years and has never actually met in person anyone else in the company.
Patrick, thank you so much for being such an awesome podcast guest. This has been a great This has been a great opportunity to chat with someone like yourself, especially about such an important topic as so many HR leaders are looking to learn how to move from remote work to a hybrid schedule. So thank you for being such an awesome guest.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been great fun.
So where can people find you and FunApps online?
So you can find FundApps at fundapps.co. Plenty of info on there about our company and lots of things around people and culture. If people want to connect with me, I think probably the same with most, easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn. Search for Pat Caldwell at FundApps and connect, message me, organize a coffee. We'd be happy to have a chat.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include all of that in the show notes. So if you enjoy listening to this episode as much as Patrick and I did making it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, if this is your first time listening to our episode and our podcast, but now you would like to listen to more, then please, please, please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast players. And last but not least, all of you awesome HR and people leaders, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids. We'll be right back.